if the people across from us at the bargaining table aren't bad people, and, you know, usually they're not monsters, they're still in a structural position that gives them fundamentally different interests than ours. Their interests are not creating the best public education institution in Oregon. Their interests are in building their resume, cutting labor costs, making things more convenient for them. And that is at odds with what we need and what our students need. And the solution to that is not begging them to be nicer to us. The solution is building power. And that is a serious difference that I think the labor movement has been lacking for a long time.
Thank you, Laura. Ben or Holly, you want to jump in about how DSA has, or your experience as a socialist, has shaped your approach to union organizing?
Sure. I actually came to socialism through teaching about the science of climate change. It wasn't a huge leap for me to make the connection between the climate crisis and capitalism. And so I already mentioned that I read that book, A Planet to Win. That was a DSA political education event that we ran in our chapter.
KDOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. And today we're here with Umi Vera. How are you doing today?
Hi, it's going well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm just, you know, getting through everything that's happening nowadays and always down to hop onto a conversation to talk about anything prison related.
We appreciate having you, and you're all doing some amazing work that you do in the community and with your organization. Can you tell us a little about yourself and how you've related to doing all this work?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Umi Vera. I am a child of immigrant parents, indigenous parents from the northern areas of Mexico. And I grew up in Los Angeles area half of my life, born and raised, and this other half over here in the Portland metro area. And I remember organizing and activism just kind of like from family members, extended family members in LA that had worked in farm work. That's kind of how my family actually migrated up to the States in the most recent generations, if we probably weren't like maybe nomadically migrating in some of those journeys already, but through the Bracero program. So a lot of my, like my grandparents, uncles, aunts were farm workers. And I recall maybe like at 4 or 5 years old, hearing about my tía going to Farm Worker United, or what was it, UFW, United Farm Workers Union meetings and things like that. And so I have vague memory of that in my childhood, but mostly I think being politicized when we migrated to Beaverton, you know, everybody spoke Spanish in LA, and migrating up here in the mid 90s was a culture shock. So I think I also started noticing things maybe when I was in high school, I was involved at our church, our entire family was. And so I would kind of help a few days a week with like English classes for adults. And so I quickly kind of picked up on like similar patterns of struggles that like immigrants and undocumented people were going through in the community. And so when I eventually made it to college, you know, I'd realized that there had been a lot of peers of mine that didn't go to a college or a university and, you know, were very qualified. So I got involved in organizing and activism officially in my undergrad years in Eugene, Oregon, around, you know, advocating for immigrant folks to have access to things like the state version of the DREAM Act, tuition equity. And so I've been kind of involved in the immigrant rights movement ever since. And I guess generally, because it's always been a social issue that's, I guess a lot of folks in my community, you know, are going through. I come from a mixed documented family. And so being interested in how we survive state violence and how we think about safety, I think about those moments, just my toddler years of my tía, you know, coordinating with her colleagues, how they're going to think about safety, or, you know, organizing around wage theft, or how they're not allowed to organize. And, you know, state police is used to like, you know, stop that. But beyond that, just also more recently in realizing that, you know, like the way that immigrants are targeted by police through the tech industry is very severe. And in the more recent years, you know, I've had the honor to mobilize with trans and immigrant folks in detention and kind of coordinate campaigns around the unfortunate, you know, just a lot of unfortunate things that happen in detention centers. So just kind of calling attention to that through the lens of abolition. And so by extension, also, you know, the prison industrial complex in ways. And that's a little different now in the advocacy and the work that we do in Portland United Against Hate. But that is a little bit about my background. And in PUA, we know we do support a lot of folks that go through hate violence and actually face, you know, violence by main perpetrators being law enforcement themselves. So there's still a link there in how we advocate around, you know, even redistributing funds away from police so that, you know, community needs are met around houselessness and, you know, so many social services that have been needed for a long time. But yeah, that's a little bit about me and my background, and I'd love to talk more about PUA as well.
Sure. And Umi, you're the executive director for PUA. How did you get involved? And can you give us a little background as well on the organization and how the organization itself came to be?
Yeah, so essentially, you might recall in 2017, in the spring, there was an unfortunate hate crime that resulted in the death of an individual trying to protect harm on the MAX. And so at the time, I'd been, you know, organizing, doing racial justice, immigrant rights work in Portland for some time. And I got to be part of the beginning stages of PUA when, you know, the city of Portland responded and a lot of racial justice organizations, you know, mentioned like we've been calling attention to this hate violence for quite some time. And so PUA came out of a coalition of interest of many organizations in supporting And more recently, in the last few years, we've become a fiscally sponsored program, kind of independent out of the city. And essentially what we do is we have an independent reporting database since 2018, reporthatepdx.com. You could connect with any one of our community organization partners in the coalition, or, you know, have a peer support you in connecting with any social services through our network, or also navigate reporting with a peer around, you know, some hate violence that you've been through. Many individuals have reported in 2020, you know, when we weren't able to be out in the field, you know, we still received 531 reports. And in 2021, we're about to release that report. And the numbers definitely just increase. And so violence, there's definitely an uphill increase in violence, as we know from what's being reported, but also, you know, getting the direct stories from individuals about what they're going through is also an added layer. So feel free to visit reporthatepdx.com to find more support on how to navigate communities surviving through, or also just our many trainings. We offer many trainings around de-escalation, around the effects of Islamophobia, the effects of hate violence, and a lot of trainings around a variety of topics to really just kind of address roots of hate violence that we see in Portland a lot now, but also that I think essentially have a root cause with a lot of historical effects around colonization, around, you know, white supremacy. We see annually the Proud Boys, or variation of white nationalist groups, announcing, you know, the end of August as an annual day of confrontation and a lot of violence. And so, yeah, we have some partnerships and some things coming up so we can hope to provide a resource or a toolkit for community and neighborhoods to address ways to support each other and keep each other as safe as possible.
Well, just like Prison Pipeline here, our whole anecdote basically is looking at the roots of crime as it relates to the prisons and the police. And of course, as you mentioned, it's all directly connected to slavery, colonialism, and it's a question of how much of that is even different historically from today. And obviously you have tons of great data that we're gonna talk about. So, but my one question about that too was, have things changed? Does it seem like things have actually changed as far as hate crimes? Is it the fact that maybe we're documenting it more, that we're even more aware of it? Or do you think it's even gotten worse? What do you think it looks like in the larger landscape of kind of American history, if you will?
I really appreciate that. Thank you for asking that. I think you bring up a really good point. And, you know, I think Black folks and Indigenous folks and many, many different communities have been bearing witness to the fact by generations and telling each other stories of what it's like, you know, having grown up here in the 80s and 90s. And from, I think a lot of what we hear from each other in communities is that, you know, things vary and they're still as violent or as the fact that we have to think about our safety still continues as always. And I think it's really interesting. I think other academics and folks have made a connection to, like, whenever there's social despair, economic despair, it really, you know, there's kind of a parallel spike around hate towards communities or groups, also like violent aggression as well. And so throughout time, we've seen that. And I think we're also obviously experiencing something extremely horrible right now. And it's having a continued impact around people's income and employment. And so, I mean, to answer your question, I think, yeah, Black and Brown folks and many communities have been talking about how violent the Oregon Trail has been and the effects of, you know, the fact that Oregon became a white utopia at a time where this nation was deciding whether we should abolish, you know, slavery. But instead, slavery, many academics would also talk about how it hasn't been abolished. You know, now we have the prison system. And so, yeah, I mean, in many ways, within the immigrant community, a lot of policies around immigration are also created specifically as anti-Muslim, anti-Black, or targeting Black countries or countries in Latin America or the Caribbean where there are Black migrants. And so all of this policy or anti-Muslim sentiment since 9/11, since, you know, that really shifted a lot of immigration policy at the federal level, or mass funding for what is now, you know, ICE, Immigrant Customs Enforcement, all of these things, all of these systems and decisions have been anti-Black and anti-Muslim, you know, racist decisions that greatly surveilled and policed, you know, communities that have always been surveilled and policed under colonial anti-Black state power. And so that's essentially what Oregon, in the context of us that you reside here now or in the Pacific Northwest, that is the root of the creation of the state of Oregon, you know? And so, yeah, you see some of those things now with folks feeling the pressure of economic decline, of not being able to work, and that the blame goes towards an immigrant, that the blame goes towards feminist activism, you know, that the blame goes towards a group of Black and brown women organizing around another death in their community. And so all of that is really connected, and you're right. I definitely do have a lot of data. Some of the data that will be seen in our most recent report kind of looks into the tracking of these reports that we've had since 2017. So I'll mention one thing. I don't even know what to call them really, but around a lot of aggression that's being tracked. One thing that we are tracking is the increase in hate violence towards Asian community members in the area. And so since 2017 till 2021, there's been an increase in 412% in the attacks towards Asian Americans. There's also been an increase in the amount of time that we've been tracking since 2017, 2018 until now, that the main cause, the main motivation of hate violence is race and ethnicity. It's increased by 210% over the years, in, according to our tracking. Also, two more points. The incidents reported in downtown has increased by 1,017% in our tracking. And finally, the incidents reported on streets and sidewalks has increased by 653% over the years. And so, I mean, it's definitely, I guess, the numbers are staggering, and, you know, for many folks like you and many communities doing social justice and activism and talking about these, having these conversations, some of this is not so surprising, but it's also, I guess it's been important for us to, you know, tell the story for something that maybe we're seeing just now, that maybe some elected officials know about, are aware, or acknowledge some hate violence or instances more so than we have maybe at the beginning when we were really trying to, you know, initially create this database so that we can convince elected officials and the public that it's happening. Nowadays in 2022, you know, it's a different reality. It's our daily reality in many ways. It's in the news, or we are knowing of people in our communities or that we personally know that are surviving, you know, major violence. So
folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Umi Vera, Executive Director of Portland United Against Hate, talking about a lot of different things, historical hate and violence, and how that relates to today. And one thing I just wanted to ask you about that was striking was the high rate, how much the violence has gone up in downtown Portland. And I know there's a lot to talk about, but if you could maybe just say something about that, because that's a really high percentage to go up. I mean, that's not just saying, you know, 5%, 10%, 20%. I mean, this is like, you know, and also in relationship to where this is hopefully communicating with policymakers, where if there has been any, you know, push for them to actually light the fire under their butts and get to work here on this.
Yes, thank you. To address both of those points, you know, the first one, there is a very clear spike, I think, in our data in 2020 and in 2021. And I think a lot of it in downtown, particularly pertaining to some of our outreach during, you know, in May and June of 2020, we did some outreach and demonstrations. And so there was a lot of youth groups that really helped mobilize to really help inform each other that this database is available. And so that did bring a spike of folks that were experiencing kind of like some of that reporting around police excessive force. But, you know, at the same time, I think it's equally really high and the spikes are there because even outside of those spaces, outside of demonstrations and outside of essentially what are peaceful demonstrations that were met, you know, in May and June or the summer of 2020 that were met with federal police, even outside of that, there has been an increase of people reporting their individual moments that they faced certain violence as well. And so thank you for asking that, because it's important to make that distinction as well. And also the fact that youth, for the most part, have really driven a lot of the awareness and the reporting. Some data from our 2020 report, for example, out of the 531 incident reports we received, 24% reported that hate incidents were committed by law enforcement themselves. And also we had a kind of like a record breaking of reporting that came from youth. For example, that same year in 2020, 34% of reported targets of hate incidents were under the age of 20. You know, obviously we did see youth activism, but I think we also saw youth talking about what it's like going to school and arriving to school or experiencing, you know, hate violence in school, so much so that, you know, we're coordinating a anti-hate summit for students in K through 12 around the state with our partners, Campus Compact of Oregon. And so that's coming up Saturday, May 7th, pretty soon. Feel free to find information on our site around that for youth. And so, yeah, a lot of that has been driven by, you know, through tech and technology and people informing themselves of this resource through there as well. That was to the first point. And then I hope I answered that first point. And then
that's above and beyond. I had no idea, actually, that it was such high reporting among the youth. And I think that maybe that's something that people also kind of don't think about maybe enough, you know, especially in context of, you know, there's so much bullying that happens at schools and things like that. But then, you know, how does it play out? And again, this whole piece of where are the actual policy and lawmakers in this? Where are the police in any of this, you know, on either sides of the fence, you know?
Yes. And then also to that, I think PUA, Portland United Against Hate, has been very lucky to be part of a coalition of many organizations that, you know, like APANO, Unite Oregon, a lot of organizations that have been doing like C4 political work that have been advocating around hate violence at the statewide level. They were APANO and Unite Oregon and Latino Network and a number of other organizations were able to champion in 2019 and 2020 some legislation around, you know, a definition around hate violence and hate crimes, which is something that, you know, wasn't necessarily defined anywhere before. In terms of law enforcement, I mean, there is now, at least within the state, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, a reporting system. There are some resources trying to support and connect, you know, with community organizations that support people. So there are some efforts, and it's very, very new. And as we know, policy is really interesting. There's been a benefit to bring back, you know, improvements to this policy session, even post 2019 and 2020 legislative sessions after that. And so I think we still have a long way to go. I think in Portland or in Multnomah County, for example, we're lucky to, you know, now see elected officials that respond to, you know, either community needs or when things are reported around police involvement or hate violence. This is very new that we have some elected officials that were able to, you know, demonstrate and show the data that we're receiving and receive an attention that may be from lived experience. And so I think we need more of that. I think we need more elected officials that actually represent or understand that this is, you know, very real, that don't see the need to just increase police budgets when there's more stories around shootings or that kind of violence as well. You know, I think things get more nuanced, but it comes back to the fact that, you know, law enforcement isn't providing some sort of solution to awful violence, or, you know, they're not really equipped to prevent it either. And there are many, many things that can really help prevent a lot of violence. And so we need to focus on that. So we do see some elected officials that, you know, are ready to have these conversations, are running on these platforms and things. I think it makes it easier when we have all of this, we've had all of this data that we're heard from certain individuals and less so from some, and, you know, folks are still learning.
Adam here from Prison Pipeline, asking you to donate now to community-supported radio, KBOO 90.7 FM. You can donate right now at kboo.fm/give. Check out the KBOO mobile app, and you can snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please urge your friends and family members to keep us on the air. Support the movement for community radio. Support KBOO at kboo.fm/give. Check out the KBOO mobile app and snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Well, can you talk a little bit too, since we got our last kind of few minutes here as well, just about the, just going back on the process. You mentioned the website a few times. It's always good to mention again. And also just so people kind of know what is going on with that when they're going to the website. They're seeing different things, but of course there's also these places to be reporting things. And can you just talk a little bit about the, kind of that process, how it works?
Absolutely. So when you visit reporthatepdx.com, you'll come through a portal that shows you that there's one of two ways to report. Either one, contacting our coalition within PUA to connect with somebody peer-to-peer to process the situation, or also identify any of the 80 or so organizations. Some of them offer counseling and mental health support services, support groups. Others are social justice community groups, and so they vary. Or also you can feel free to navigate this portal on your own at the comfort of your home, electronically following step-by-step, telling and sharing whatever you feel comfortable with. You could remain anonymous as well, and you don't have to report any of your identities. And also, I think more importantly, we have an entire coalition that, you know, is ready to support you and let you know that you're not alone. Many community members have been through this, and there's also opportunities to learn and talk about many other forms of hate that we need to unlearn in our communities for generations to come, so that we can continue building a future where we, you know, we're not having to be concerned around anti-Black hate or ableism or transphobia or Islamophobia, any kind of misogyny, and what have you. And so we have spaces where we can share and build community around that. And beyond that, you know, we hope to have more opportunities in the future around social justice and community building.
That's all great. Are there any particular things on the horizons people should be looking out for as far as maybe events or campaigns or anything of that nature that you'd like to talk about?
Thank you. Look at our website for upcoming events. We have Portland United Against Hate, .org. And aside from our database, to reporthatepdx.com is where you report the incidents. But our website will have information on our number of workshops that we have periodically, virtually, but especially our upcoming event that we have coming up. The 7th of May is a Saturday between 10 and 3 p.m. For youth, for students K through 12 that are facing also hate violence or a lack of support. You know, sometimes there's support within the Tri-County area, but a lot of students haven't had support in some of the high schools in Clackamas or even in the rural parts of Oregon. And so we have resources around how to support each other, support your administrators at times, and, you know, having a better language or tools to be able to respond or hold violence and hate violence that happens in high schools or campuses accountable, which, you know, remains a major issue as well. And so join us for the Anti-Hate Summit coming up the 7th of May. You can find more information on our website about that event, PortlandUnitedAgainstHate.org.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show and all the amazing work that you're all doing. Looking forward to having y'all back and hearing updates. I know we just scratched the surface on all of the amazing data you've been collecting and how that plugs into you know, all the practical work in the community and like all these events that you're talking about. And for folks tuning in, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline on the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our guests and our Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James, for helping do production. Free them all.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
This is Mona Bowen of Film at 11 here on KBOO Portland, and it's time for the spring membership drive. As you know,